and you've got to hide your love away, which is the subject of my next guest, Robin and Rick Bragg Martelli. Hide Your Love Away, an intimate story of Brian Epstein, as told by Larry Stanton. It's a memoir about true events that reveal, for the first time, many tightly kept secrets close to the heart of one man for 56 years until now. It's a story of a clandestine, multi-year gay relationship and loving, supportive, intimate conversations between an attractive young American named Larry Stanton and the British-born manager of the Beatles, Brian Epstein. It's been put together with Rick and Robin Bragg Martelli, who I'm delighted to be welcoming live to the show. Robin and Rick, good afternoon from us. Good morning to you.
Yes, hello. Good afternoon to you.
Whereabouts are you, by the way? Because I mean, it looks fabulous behind you, unless that's a really good Zoom filter. But whereabouts are you today?
Wonderful. Right now, we're in Studio City, California.
Oh, fantastic stuff. Right then. So tell me a little bit then about your backgrounds and how you came to meet Larry, because Larry is obviously the center point, if you like, of this whole story.
Well, both of our backgrounds, we've known Larry for many years. We are both in business and management and production and literary. We have an entertainment background. And Larry...
Larry was a lifetime friend, to be honest. Known him for, gee whiz, I can honestly say I've known him since I was about 12 years old.
Right.
And when I was in rock and roll bands back in those days, or trying to get into rock and roll bands. And so I was met him and didn't know anything about his personal life, yet we were very close. And I think that leads to the fact that he wasn't very open about his personal life because he was guarded because of all the negativity against being gay, you know, at that particular time and earlier days. So he kept it quiet. So I never knew about it until we were talking one time.
We were having conversations with Larry. He was telling us his wonderful stories about Zsa Zsa Gabor and a lot of the celebrities and the funny things that happened. And our stories evolved. And we found them so fantastic. We said, you know, Larry, you should write a book about this. This is fabulous. And we didn't even know half of the story at that point in time.
We just thought he met Brian Epstein and they had some kind of a business relationship. That's all we knew. But he started to open up to us over time. And I think it's because of Robin.
Well, my father was bisexual, eventually gay, totally gay. And Larry, knowing that, made him feel more comfortable having conversations with us about the more intimate details that involved, you know, his and Brian's relationship. And we were just amazed. We thought, well, this is really a great story. And Larry really did keep it secret for so long because he was so insecure with the fact that, you know, it was a homosexual relationship.
And I think he's of that generation that still feels they almost have to keep things in the closet. You know, it's not the modern generation that comes forward. So,
and that's an interesting point because, you know, here we are at the moment and cis rights and trans rights and the LGBTQ plus movement is rightly taking center stage after the years, but it's not even a lifetime. It's 60 years ago. I mean, homosexuality in the UK was banned, I think, in 67, 68. And there's still, and you're in the States, and obviously, you know, you're on the West Coast of the East States, and then there are the states in the middle, which is a little bit conservative. And that is still, you know, pretty much a taboo subject, despite what we may see on quote unquote mainstream media. So for gay men and for gay women of that generation, it's not something that you can, if you're in San Francisco, that's not a problem, I should admit, or New York. But for gay men and women leading ordinary lives, not wanting to draw attention to themselves, it's still, as you said, kept close to their chests.
Very true. Right. And it didn't really get legal here in the United States until the 70s. And in 67, I think the year that Brian passed away is when they started starting the movement to try to correct that. But those guys and women, but those people at that time really had to be careful what they were doing with whom and where and all that.
Because it was just not the fear of being you know, torn apart just because of their sexual preferences. They would lose their jobs. Friends, family would disown them. It was really a very emotional topic to even discuss with anybody that wasn't in that circle that they felt they had to hide their love away.
And that brings us to Brian and the fact that the last year of his life, he was very concerned about, first of all, having a new contract with the Beatles. It was coming to an end. And he was concerned that, you know, his private information was leaking out. And the last thing he wanted to do was to embarrass the lads, so to speak. He didn't want to embarrass them, put them in a bad situation. And he was very scared that his personal life was going to be revealed.
So how did they come across each other? How did Larry and Brian first meet up? Because he's, you know, massively successful manager for the Beatles. Was it over a trip? Did Larry go over to the UK? Was Brian coming on a stateside trip? How did they actually first meet?
Let me address that in a second, but I want to go back to what I just said. The Beatles knew he was gay. Don't miss it. That wasn't the issue. The issue was having it go public. Now going to back how they met.
Well, Larry drove a taxi cab at the time. And so he had a coworker that picked Brian up at the airport and took him to the Beverly Hills Hotel. And during the conversation that they had in the car, I mean, the cab driver, Larry's coworker and good friend, realized who it was. But, you know, he was kind of, wow, this is Brian Epstein.
So they invited everybody to Brian invited the cab driver and said, hey, if you have some friends, I'm having a party tonight. Why don't you drop by? And of course, that friend of that cab driver told Larry about it, and Larry decided, why not? And but still not knowing that it was going to be Brian Epstein.
Right.
So he showed up around 11 o'clock at night at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And that's where it all started.
And so there was an attraction, obviously, between them both. But how did they carry out this? Was Brian sort of flying over to, you know, to the States? Did he bring Larry back with him? Were there long transatlantic phone calls, you know, late into the night? How did the relationship develop? Because you can meet somebody, you're flown over to, you're staying in the Beverly Hills Hilton, the Beverly Hills Hotel, excuse me. You're going to hook up with somebody. But then, you know, this is the 60s. This is a generation, you know, of, shall we say, casual affairs and people. I mean, I know it's not too, we're not totally into Hate Asprey and Free Love. But still, you know, there's a rock star. Because he was the fifth Beatle, Brian Epstein. That had always been his aim. And as I said, the lads and obviously the Beatles were very fond of Brian. They kept his huge secret, as we call it now. Then they kept it quiet. It would have been easy. I mean, Lennon had a tongue like a viper's sting sometimes. But still, so you know, how did they continue their relationship, and how did it grow, and how does Larry remember? Remember that time?
It started, you know, obviously at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And as Brian would leave and come and go, he would come to L.A. often because, he, you know, he wasn't just handling the Beatles. He had a host of top notch clients, Celia Black, the Dakotas. Just about everybody that you can think of. He had his hands around. So when he would come into town, he would always call Larry beforehand and they would meet up. And that's how they would get together.
They developed their relationship.
And Brian would introduce him to a couple of close friends of his. And those close friends turned out to be Sal Mineo and Lionel Bart. A terrific songwriter in his own right.
Yeah.
And the four of them would have many an evening together, just hanging out, drinking champagne and going out to restaurants.
Yeah, they'd go out to quite a number of great and famous old Hollywood restaurants, and it would eat the best of food. And a lot of times it was just Brian and Larry that were getting together.
Yeah,
then they did have Sal Mineo and Lionel Bart join them.
Like the restaurants La Rue's or the Bistro in Beverly Hills or Dresden's in East Hollywood or Musso and Frank's in Hollywood. All these great haunts at that time they shared.
I mean, was there was there sort of a scene that they could go to where they could be comfortable, like an underground? Because, you know, we talk about the civil rights movement and this, you know, listen, you know, same-sex rights are human rights as well. But there was sort of the, what do they call it, the Midnight Railway, or the places where, you know, white and black people of color could go and mix quite freely. Were there homosexual, yes, gay-friendly restaurants, you know, that they could frequent?
They would go to the known restaurants weren't a problem, but when they wanted to be private and intimate, there were some off the beat bars and places to go to. Now is West Hollywood, which is primarily known to be recognized as a gay city. At that time, you know, it wasn't, but there was a lot of little bars that they would be able to go to that were open to all that. And even in Hollywood, the Frolic Room, which is a bar which still exists.
Brilliant.
So they would hang at different places. The Melody Room they went to, which turned out to be what is it now? It's the Viper Room.
The infamous Viper Rooms. Yeah, of course.
That's right.
And it was originally the Melody Room, and they would go there on Sunset Strip. So they didn't have a problem. They weren't ever harassed at any restaurant, even a large name restaurant, what have you. They weren't bothered at all.
Does Larry regard it as a relationship on an equal footing then? Because obviously you've got this this rich, successful British agent who is looking after the most successful band of all time, not just the 60s. And then there's Larry, who's introduced him by his cab driving friend. Or did he always think this was a relationship of equals?
No, it's interesting that they both suffered from the same problems. In other words, they both had depression issues. They both suffered the fact that they both wanted to find true love, but had this situation being gay presented a problem. They were both of a Jewish faith. So they had a lot of things they could relate to. However, they were poles apart in terms of economic standings and success. Larry wanted to be a rock and roll singer. He wanted to be a singer. He was trying to be a singer. He didn't tell Brian that because he didn't want Brian to think that he was trying to butter up to him for that reason. But he was actually before Brian, during Brian, and after Brian trying to excel as a singer. In fact, Hank Santacola, who was Frank Sinatra's manager at the time, actually signed Larry to Reprise Records at one point. Which was kind of interesting.
And did Brian bring Larry over to the UK? Did he show him the bright lights?
No. Okay. Brian invited Larry to go to the set at, I think it was on the film Help. Yes. But Larry's mother got seriously ill and didn't go. He regrets that to this day, of course. So his dealings were through, like you mentioned, transatlantic phone conversations and all the times Brian was here in Los Angeles. There was another person that came into place that was kind of an evil person,
referred to him as a toxic lover.
A toxic lover. He's been written up in other Beatle books and various different books on music that was involved with Brian. But he was really the person that really added to Brian's great suffering and almost demise. We believe that he was probably responsible, in our opinion, for Brian's early death. Mm. And people didn't know where this particular person came from. Well, in actuality, Larry introduced him to Brian, and that's where that relationship started. So Larry knew this guy pretty well, and he knew he was a player, you know, someone that would take advantage of,
It was a roommate of Larry's that was responsible for the introduction to Larry of this person that's the toxic lover. And by way of the meeting, and that's the first party that was at the Beverly Hills Hotel that Brian had, this roommate, as well as this toxic lover that came into Brian's life and really caused havoc, that's where they were first introduced. So even though Larry and Brian's relationship was beginning to come together, this other person had his eye on Brian.
So there's a lot of As the, so if you say that, that they Brian wanted to take Larry to the film set of Help, this is like 1963, 1964, and it's very early days of Beatlemania. Help is 64, 65, if I'm trying to get reboot the brain cell here.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and Brian dies in 67, doesn't he?
He's, correct.
He's in the UK there, and he is a well-known personality, and there's an undercover or there's an underground gay scene there. There's also in that gay scene, there are a couple that you talk about the toxic lover, but there were also some English lords involved. There were some very heavy criminals involved. There are infamous photographs, of course, at parties being held in Pimlico with Lord Boothby and one of the Cray brothers. Was this a scene that Brian was aware of or was even on the fringes of?
He was totally aware of it, and he was frightened by it because at that time he was actually being threatened by it. There were people that wanted to do business with him and take over his company, like Robert Stigwood, as an example. If you read about Robert Stigwood, it's about, oh gosh, I'm going to take over Brian's company, I'm going to pay him whatever it is. But if you stop and think about it, why would Brian be willing to sell his company? He's the number one guy in the world to Robert Stigwood. The reason why that conversation even happened is if you looked over the shoulders of Robert Stigwood, you'd find the Cray twins.
The Cray twins, yes.
Which were notorious gangsters at that time. And Brian was scared of the Cray twins. And he was also scared of this toxic lover. At one point, I think it was the last concert that the Beatles did, you know that as a personal manager, he would be there with the Beatles to see their last performance. He wasn't there. He was with his attorney chasing after the toxic lover had stolen his attaché case with compromising photographs, drugs and cash and contracts in the attaché case. And Brian was freaked out and they were trying to chase him down at the time the Beatles were doing their last concert.
Right. It wasn't just Brian's briefcase, but the attorney, Brian's attorney's briefcase as well. Yeah. So it was, you know, Brian's attorney wasn't going to put up with any baloney. And he said, no, we're going to,
It's an interesting thing, though, isn't it? Because, you know, everybody thinks about the 60s being that time of peace and love and goodwill and understanding to all men, etc. But there are dark undercurrents that are happening from the mid-60s onwards. And, you know, we know that the Beatles and the Star Club in Germany, every band was taking uppers to keep them playing so much. And Brian got into, I'm not saying he's a heavy drug user, but it was of the day. I mean, Lennon, McCartney, etc., they go psychedelic. We have Sgt. Pepper. We have the Magical Mystery Tour, which completely goes out the window at that point. So there was that undercurrent. And also, as the 60s progress, okay, Brian's gone, but you get the out of controlness that ends up with, you know, like Alamont, for example, Rolling Stones, Gimme Shelter, and that hippie dream that is starting in the mid-60s, you know, Rubber Soul and that whole folky movement, and it suddenly turns very, very dark very, very quickly indeed after sort of 67, 68.
Yeah, especially when the Charles Manson murders happened, I think that pulled the plug on all that peace and love. But interesting thing in Peter Jackson's documentary, Get Back, that's out now about the Beatles, Paul McCartney is in the studio with all the guys. And he basically says to everybody, you know, we never had discipline to begin with. And Brian is the one that brought us discipline. And now he's gone. And yeah. Going to the four winds. I mean, they didn't have somebody that can control them and settle them down. And I do believe that Brian's passing was a great contributor to why the Beatles broke up or had problems at that particular time.
Yeah, contrary to what people were saying, that it was Yoko Ono, for example, or, you know, George had a temper tantrum. It's a very good documentary, but Brian really was the glue that helped keep them together and organized. And granted, there were other people that contributed to the Beatles' success besides their own, you know, genius of musical talents.
Let's get back to Larry then, because we could go off on that. So we could go off on a thing about right. what could have happened. And we could be here for the next 3 hours. But what was, you know, Larry's obviously, Brian is talking to Larry. Brian has these concerns about what's happening on, you know, Robert Stigwood must perhaps muscling in the underbelly, these compromising photographs coming to the, you know, and as you said, he's at the same time, they're having to keep this whole relationship, this whole sexuality underground. Does Larry remember, you know, in the months leading up to Brian's demise, does he remember him being more anxious? Does he remember him being more stressed? Because it seems to be a little too convenient, if you like. I mean, and you've got the toxic lover thrown as well, just to add a little something to the mezcla, as we say. Uh-huh. Is it just a little bit too convenient that Brian Epstein is suddenly out of the picture all of a sudden? Because as far as you could see in the 66, 67, he was just a, you know, functioning, if extremely stressed, business person. And you wouldn't really thought that he would have, you know, passed away so quickly.
Well, that last year of his life, attributing drugs and alcohol and the stress of being pressured and being put into a corner, corners that he didn't want to be in, really, I think, led him to his young death. Larry was actually talking to him on a transatlantic phone conversation the night he died, or the morning he died. And so Larry does remember hearing a voice in the room, another voice that sort of shocked Brian. And so this is all revealed in the book, where we come up with sort of our opinions that seem to be sort of say that there could have been something going on that hasn't been really revealed. I really believe personally that Brian, when the doctor came to the house and knocked down the door basically and found Brian, I think they cleaned up everything before authorities came into place, primarily again to protect the Beatles image and all that. I don't think that I don't blame them for doing that, but I think by doing that they also covered up some other things by accident.
Well, Brian and Larry's relationship continued for a number of years. They had a lot of more, you know, as it got closer to 67, 66, even later 65, there were more conversations by telephone than there were meetings, actual meetings. But their friendship was such of trust and a love that they would share a lot of things with each other. And Larry could see that Brian was really suffering by way of their conversations and him having conversations with other people in Brian's life as well.
I mean, did Brian say at any point, you know, did Larry remember saying, okay, this is getting all too much for me. I just want to sort of walk away from it. I want to be a normal person. I want to go back to that young manager who's spotting Jerry and the Pacemakers, who's spotting Cilla Black, who's bringing, you know, you're seeing a young Beatles at the Cavern, which has transformed everybody's life on the planet from that one night onwards. I mean, did Brian think he could handle, because you got Stigwood coming on and then Peter Grant comes in with Led Zeppelin and that's a whole new kettle of management, to put it mildly. And then, of course, in the 70s, we go to massive arena gigs and everything changes, you know, in terms of corporate and pressures. And we get a different style of management, should we say, than Brian's very subtle, very structured sort of the way that he, as you said, he made sure that the Beatles were all in the same place at the same time, pointing in the same direction when they were supposed to be playing.
Well, we don't believe that Brian was giving up what role he played with the Beatles. As a matter of fact, tell me about your conversation. You were sitting with, was it Steve?
Oh, yes, that's right. I remember that I was actually in the office of Rick Gerard. Rick Gerard produced the Jefferson Airplane, Jose Feliciano, Harry Nilsson. And Harry Nilsson was much loved by the Beatles, as well as Brian. And I was in the office when Rick got Rick Gerard got a telegram from Brian saying that he wanted to manage Harry Nilsson. That was a week before his death. So he wasn't giving up about management. He wasn't selling off his company. He was really going forward and wanting to nurture new talent. Mm-hmm. And of course, obviously the Harry Nilsson thing didn't work out.
I mean, this may sound like a facile question, but how did Larry find out? Was it literally a phone call or looking at the papers? Was it as bad as that? I mean, how did it?
Like
everybody else on his A&M radio in his car, you know, and he pulled over to the side of the road and basically got sick to his stomach. You know, it was just, he couldn't believe it, you know, tragic.
It would have been very easy for him then, well, possibly, Or perhaps I'm looking at this in 21st century glasses on, but then to go to the nearest news outlet, Latlet, or even 5 years later when homosexuality becomes okay in the States in the 70s after the Stonewall movement, and gone, I was Brian Epstein's lover, you know, National Enquirer, Oprah Winfrey Show, CBS, you know, the networks, the whole thing. Why do you think he kept that to himself? Was it because they were lovers?
Well, that was a great deal of the reasons why. And not only that, but, you know, to this day, there's some discomfort with the fact that they did have a relationship, homosexuality. And it was just something, it was too personal to share with anybody.
He's very guarded about it. I mean, yes, you're right. In a day of the Enquirer, what have you, yes, he could have made an easy score and some money and what have you, but he's not cut that way. He's always respected his relationship with Brian. He always felt he was protecting Brian. He was very upset that when he died, that he had at that time no one to call. Because if you remember, Brian had a couple of housekeepers. One of them was very close to Brian. I forgot his last name, but his first name was Lonnie. And Lonnie and Larry had a relationship in terms of phone conversations, but he was let go. And he was probably let go because Lonnie didn't understand this relationship with, again, the toxic lover that we mentioned in the book by name. He hired a new housekeeper. That the new housekeeper, Larry didn't have a phone number on. Larry didn't have a phone number on Derek Taylor or those people. So he didn't know what to do when Brian died. But he just sort of sat there stunned and didn't
right,
do anything.
Right. And he thought to himself, well, what am I going to do? Call, you know, the MI5 or, you know, call the Scotland Yard. He was just in total shock and figured that there wasn't anything or anybody he could reach out to that would help any matter.
Speaking of MI5 and the Scotland Yard and FBI, you know, we've tried to do as much research as we could to try to find who we refer to again as the toxic lover. And he honestly has disappeared. There's no record. We know he was arrested in LA. We know he was arrested in New York. We know he had some legal problems in London, and he is as good as gone. So we're not sure if we haven't found the information, or he is part of the witness protection program, either with Scotland Yard or FBI, because he had information on the Cray twins and a Cray murder. And he also had information on Brian. All those things were being scrutinized and watched carefully by certainly the FBI. As you know, the FBI, they were watching John Lennon and everybody else, you know, because they were so afraid of a takeover, I guess. It's kind of funny to think about it now.
So the mystery with this about this toxic lover, he's just totally disappeared, and one can only assume this guy's been mentioned in other places, other stories of other people's, you know, in other people's books even, and again, nobody knew where he came from, but you would think I think. Some of these other people say things probably worse than even what we're talking about in our book. And there's nothing has ever happened. No, you know, he hasn't surfaced. You've heard nothing in any of the tabloids.
And speaking of that, we didn't do a sensationalized book talking about every detail in the world. We left a lot to the imagination, because I think the imagination works a lot better. And we want to be respectful to Larry's story, Larry's life, as well as Brian. And I think they were two gentlemen that were trying to find the same thing that I have found with my wife, that we're all looking for. We're looking for love. I mean, who isn't, you know? And they were denied of it. They had to walk over things that we never had to do, you know. They couldn't hold hands in public. They couldn't be nice to each other physically in public, because, oh my God, it was a sin of life.
Taboo.
You know? Taboo. Yeah.
What was it like then putting this together, and when Larry, your friend, the guy you've known for a very long time, starts telling you this sort of stuff? I mean, it must have been, I mean, you knew a little of his history, but this must have been a, not unbelievable, but just fascinating and the wow factor. But also, it's all very well somebody saying to you, I want to tell you the story, but then to put it into an order, as you have done in this book, and to make it legible and readable and believable, even. I'm not saying that, you know, but it would be very easy to go on shock, horror, this, that, gay, gangster, toxic lover. But the way that it's put together is, as you said, respectful to both men.
Well, I just want to say that there is a point, even though you know somebody for life, you trust them for life, you believe everything they've ever said, and then they're telling you something and you go,
wow.
Wait a minute. Wait a second. You know what I mean? So what's interesting is that while we were writing the book and researching and doing all that we're doing in London, they auctioned off Brian Epstein's private phone book. And in Brian's phone book is Larry's name, his phone number, and his Hollywood address. So when we saw that, I went, holy cow, well, that substantiates everything. You know, well, and it's interesting that Brian wrote Larry's name down as Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N. And when Larry introduced himself to Brian, it was Lauren, L-O-R-E-N, but Brian spelled it the other way. But it's interesting that the exact address of where Larry lived in Hollywood is in Brian's book. And we have that a copy of that in the book.
Well, and then quite a number of the things that Larry was telling us, because it was, you know, months and months of story gathering in order for us to put this book together. There were certain events and things that he would mention. And, you know, we did a little bit of fact checking to, you know, see how clear his memory was, and it was just spot on.
To be blunt, we didn't want to be caught with our pants down.
The book, I could talk about to you both about this until probably about midday your time, but unfortunately we are going to do the classic scene of what they call crashing the news, which you must never do on radio. This book is called Hide Your Love Away, an intimate story of Brian Epstein as told by Larry Stanton. It is by Rick and Robin Bragg Martelli, who we have been speaking to right now. Yes, I'm seeing
it. It's got a gold seal on it.
Gold seal. Now, what does the gold seal mean? Because obviously the listeners can't see that.
It's revised and expanded. We had an ability to do that from last year.
And if people want to find out more about you guys or about the book, there is an excellent website. Please go ahead and plug it to plug it like you should do.
Hide Your Love Away.
There's hideyourloveaway.com and there's marcellicompany.com.
Right. That's the
plan. MARCELLI.
The book is called Hide Your Love Away, an intimate story of Brian Epstein as told by Larry Stanton. It's by Rick and Robin Bragg Martelli, who we'll be speaking to today. Rick and Robin, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you today.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Bye bye now.